As the silent seconds dance in their eternity about me and set aflame again the fire to inspire my nimble fingers to procure the pen and awaken it in a resurrection, transforming the ink to the blood of the writer. As once again he bleeds his acquired wisdom like a light into the world.
Good morning, Carbro and the Big Chill. This is Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else, coming at you from 103.5 FM. That's WCOM. I'm here in the studio with my co-host, John Paul.
Good morning.
And also we have the privilege of having the artist, Bruce Mitchell, the cover artist for Arts Inc. magazine, with us today, whom I am going to take apart later on in the show, but say good morning there. And we've got another interesting thing to mention today. John Paul is actually starting his own show right after co-hosting mine today. And John Paul, I'm going to let you go ahead and introduce what that is, the title and all.
It's called John Paul's Truth Quest and Variety Hour. It's going to be a hodgepodge of all sorts of different things. The main aspect of it is that I'm going to talk about things that the mainstream media suppresses.
The unmedia content, as we used to have on the Speakeasy, but we decided since the Speakeasy was going more in a literary direction that we needed to create more of a separation between the two, even though I share a lot of the views in common.
Yeah, so what we're going to do on the Truth Quest is try to learn the truth that is purposefully kept from us by the mainstream corporate media and by the government cabal that is filled with criminals and other sorts that really should be in jail, but for some stupid reason get elected by the U.S. public.
Something we could actually, it is a freedom that we only have on community radio.
Indeed.
To express.
All right, and this is the only place, this is the only kind of place that you're going to hear this kind of information, because it will not be allowed on any mainstream affiliated station.
This is the pirate ship in those murky waters.
Right, so what I'm going to do over the period of the show is go into well-referenced sources that explain the truth about some of the things that are told to us on mainstream media that just simply are not correct.
Not to be confused with Radio Democracy, which already does a very good job on that sort of thing.
You mean Democracy Now?
Or Democracy Now, sorry.
Which does a pretty good job. They also, though, are gatekeepers for some aspects of the truth, and I'm going to expose them as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I look forward to taking a bite out of that once in a while. I might slip in as your co-host.
I would love that. In fact, I hope you can stay on today and talk with me some when we start my radio show. And I'm going to also ask our guest to stay with us, too. Because
if you have any views you'd like to express.
I understand he's got some thoughts about
things. Sounds good. We'd like to apologize for some of the dead air. There's been some quirky things going on, I think.
Yeah, there's a technical problem with our automated system, and it keeps kicking off at inappropriate times.
I just choke it down to we're being visited by dead people and they annoy us.
There must be something like that.
Something along those lines.
I don't know.
But anyway, so congratulations to your own show then. I certainly
Thanks
do look
very
forward
much.
To being a part
Thank
of it.
Thank you much. And let me see, today we're going to do some exploring of some of your recent writings, I think. Are we not?
Are we?
Well, you have this article that you've written that I think it's about our guest.
It is, actually, yes.
And it might be a good idea to read it on the air as sort of a preview of a good way to introduce.
That is something that I was considering. I was a little apprehensive about it, but I was informed recently by Christine that the
Christine is the editor of Arts Inc. magazine.
Yes, and editor-in-chief, and I think the founder of of the magazine itself. And I was informed recently that the article is actually not going to run in the magazine, so which should leave me free to express it. And what I'd like to do is dedicate it to the artist that we have in the studio with us.
I think that's a great idea.
So I think we will begin the show with that and then bring on the artist. The title to the piece is In Sync with Artistry and Artist, and one of the reasons it's not running in ArtSync magazine is because I think that my composition of language is a little more literary than something that would allow itself to be read easily in a magazine. I've got to find a way to level out a little more when I write magazine articles and not treat it like I would.
Yeah,
you
want it to sound
style.
More journalistic when you're writing for a magazine.
So I've got to...
Lose the flair. Don't lose the flair.
I want to say, I don't mean this in any insulting way, but I've got to dumb myself down a little. Is that the notion? What's another term for it?
That's the phrase I used, but I wouldn't have said that on the air.
Oh, you wouldn't have? Well, take it off the air then. Make it go away. But no, I meant no insult in that. We certainly have to keep certain languages simple depending on the medium. And it's a little difficult to take the Shakespearean English out of me.
Right, and I think of it more as a style adjustment rather than
a
simplification. Yeah.
Good.
So, and that's a good thing to be able to do, I believe, is to be able to write in different ways.
Well, yeah, that's very true. And I actually sent this article out to a few people. I have a certain circle of literary minds, old and new, that I send my stuff to just to get a second opinion, to get some feedback. And they're the types of people that would tell me I was full of it in a minute. So I use that to sort of weigh myself against myself. And they all really loved the article. But I can see Christine's point in it being perhaps too literary. However,
perhaps.
This is a literary show, so we're going to make
literature
of it.
So we can get away with it here.
That's right. It is called, and I shall read through it quickly. I shall read it in dedication to the artist I have sitting beside me. It's called In Sync with Artistry and Artist. And again, this is really taken from my own perspective, so do not let this be entirely reflective of the magazine, although I do think it makes a statement for ArtSync magazine in itself. In Sync with Artistry and Artist. Don't assume for a moment that the skillful cover art by Bruce Mitchell sets either standard, genre, or medium for ArtSync magazine, as it does not. What it does establish and reflect is a commitment, discipline, skill, and mastery in the artist that created the work. In that spirit, and as the premier cover design, it points invitingly toward new horizons in artistic representations and no less than myriad mediums and genres to follow. This one merely brings it home to North Carolina, which is our singular focus in the arts for the magazine, with ever-broadening perspectives to emerge. If Bruce's attention to detail and particularly subject matter on this canvas is not immediately reflective of our home state, then Andy Griffith is a bullfighter in Barcelona, Spain. Please check your luggage at the airport to see which of you has been deposited in the intended destination. This is North Carolina. When I arrived here in 1969, traveling from South Africa to Winston-Salem, this very image of life in my new South left as much an imprint as impression upon me that is as keenly alive in my consciousness now as it was then. The donuts and coffee are another story, by way of stories told and larcenies confessed while having them, and as homegrown as our native soul and soil. Bruce Mitchell was born in Worcester, Massachusetts, and is both master and student by his well-painted passions, artistic media and mediums, and explorative forays. His life is not a question of boundaries in as much as he is self-taught and disciplined in all of his creative pursuits, but rather a continuum of rising up to meet new challenges. He has lived in North Carolina since 2003 and paints full-time in his Durham studio. As a professionally trained draftsman, he learned the fundamentals of drawing and has been working his now fluid craft since 1980. Having worked in a variety of styles and media, while exploring different approaches to both realism and abstraction in parallel, has been its own reward in honing and developing his skills. Recent representational pieces are almost all done with oils. A current series of abstract paintings are also oils. Other media includes acrylic, watercolor, collage, ink, pastel, and graphite, as well as printmaking with both dry point and lino cut techniques. He has a considerable portfolio of prominent exhibits in North Carolina and throughout the Eastern Seaboard. I would highly recommend viewing his website for a more intimate perspective and personal narrative of his art and aspirations for the future. In respect to canvassing our cover artist, I feel it is entirely appropriate to quote the man directly. I have therefore selected a synopsis of statements reflective of the overall spirit of introduction from a more extensive declaration you may find on his website. I quote, Regardless of the proximate subject, my paintings are explorations of the relationships between light and shadow, figure and ground, color and space. I seek to capture a mood, a certain slant of light, and all the underlying allusions and metaphors are there to support that aim. My paintings are about being in this world at this time. For me, this means living in the built environment most of the time, and that is the proximate subject depicted in most of my recent representational works. End quote. Norman Rockwell could not have targeted or captured the ambiance and visual dynamic of Bruce's work any more profoundly. He might have peopled it and characterized the azure blue sky with a kite or two, but that is hardly necessary by Mitchell's hand. His work stands alone, as would that of any great sculptor, poet, or storyteller, in that it immediately evokes our imagination to fill in those seemingly vacant spaces with memories of our own. Suddenly they are alive with movements of time and place from yesteryear to yestermorrow, as individual and intimate as our reasons for purchasing art. And when the ebb and flow of our grateful minds and hearts recede from canvas to self again, it is but the beauty in the artist that remains. And that was the article.
Yes, I can see why Christine might have thought that was
a bit too literary, perhaps.
Yeah, not really journalistic sounding, mm-hmm. as it were, but still very good.
Well, I hope so.
So, yeah.
Well, let's hear it from Bruce himself. Very nice. Bruce, welcome to Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else, and really proud to have you on board. And congratulations for being the premier cover artist of ArtSync magazine, which I believe comes out in March, the premier issue. But
thank you, Claudio.
Let's introduce you. What have you to say about your art? What have you to say about the particular article? Let's start on that. Did you feel I covered territory as far as reflecting you?
And did you have? As you point out, you've gotten the flavor of what my art's about from the statement I have up on my website.
Yes.
For your listeners out there, my website is paintingsbybruce.com.
Good. I was hoping.
Or you could just Google me by name, and I'll come right up.
Paintingsbybruce.com.
Paintingsbybruce.com. Okay. Or Google me by name.
So give us a little background as to how you slipped into the ArtSync realm. How you found them, or they found you, or how this whole thing came about. Obviously, there's a bit of a history. I think this goes with me at least a year back now, since I got the initial correspondence, sort of a reach out to artists from mm-hmm. them.
Well, the ArtSync magazine, as they were gearing up to get their first issue together, it sent out a number of press releases, mm-hmm. and amongst those, one of the things that they sought to do was run a contest for their premier issue cover.
Right.
And as a painter, I'm always looking for opportunities like that. So sure. when that opportunity came my way via email, and I'm guessing either the Durham Arts Council mailing list or the Orange County Arts Guild, I'm on both of their mailing lists. So that came in. And when that opportunity came up, naturally I saw it as a tremendous opportunity and sent in some pictures. Mm-hmm. I do that sort of thing frequently. I enter juried shows all the time.
Sure, I understand that, yeah. It's the life, the blood flow of the artist.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't... I do that a lot, but it seldom leads to anything. And I must say I'm tremendously flattered and more than a little surprised that they've selected me for their cover. There's so many tremendous artists.
12,000 submissions.
That's what
that's
I hear. 12,000. Yes. Who knew there were that many artists yes. and
how do you
dramatists?
How do you review 12,000?
I have no idea. I'd be
entries.
Doing backflips and going nuts. I can't do this.
I mean, it'd be like, you know, thumbing through the phone book or something.
Yes. Mm.
Well, it's a credit to the jurors and the folks who reviewed all that material.
That's an incredible job.
Mm. I did review each of the websites because I tuned in for your previous show in which you were announcing the winners of the contest
and
the 10 runners-up, and I visited all
we
the
We had
websites.
Some risky fun with that.
yeah.
And there were, the quality of the people who had entered that just blew me away.
Absolutely.
And that
you know, I didn't see a weak piece anywhere.
There weren't any. And I'm sure, you know, beyond the 10 who were selected as runners-up, I'm sure there were some more
no doubt.
Just as good, if yes. not better.
You didn't happen to bring your piece with you, did you?
No.
Oh, that's too bad, because I was going to hold it up to the microphone so people could see it.
Yes, there you go.
John
Paul's a bit in the abstract today.
Well, the painting in question is indeed on my website, but Christine has sworn me to secrecy because they want to keep the which painting it is.
Yes, exactly.
A surprise.
Oh, okay.
And release
so
that.
Well, I've given a hint, but I don't think it'll give it away.
It's there, but nobody knows which one it is on the site.
It is on the site.
Oh, that's kind of cute.
And I'm not going to say which one it is.
Yeah, good for you.
I'll let folks explore the site and speculate as they will,
mm-hmm.
and everyone will see when the magazine actually comes out.
All right.
Which painting of those on my site she's selected.
Okay.
And there certainly is a variety from the realism to the abstract.
Mm-hmm.
And I really do like your abstract work as well. That's more my field of playing.
Uh-huh.
I can go traditional, but I have more fun just going all over the canvas and then deciding on what to do with it.
Well, as you've seen, I do both,
yes.
the realism and the abstraction. Lately, I've been focused on the realism.
Mm-hmm.
Those obviously take quite a lot more time. Not I wouldn't say they take any less effort. Or less energy or less input
mm-hmm.
than the abstract works, but they are time consuming. And I have been spending a lot of time doing the realism. And my tendency lately has been to go more and more toward the most realistic paintings I can make.
Mm.
Now, what I hear a lot when people are looking at my work, because, like most artists, I'll go to the openings when I'm in a juried show or if I'm doing a show of my own. I'll mm-hmm. I'll kind of lurk around through the audience and listen to what people are saying. And I get a lot of, well, it looks like a photograph.
Yeah.
And they do.
Which was my reason for bringing in the Rockwell statement, but mm-hmm. because I drew it. That's what sort of jumped out at me. But I'm not saying that would suggest that you are working from a photograph. His work did reflect that, and he did to a great extent.
Yes, Rockwell himself did mm-hmm. use photography as source material for a lot of his work. He did it the same way I'm doing it, where I'm not taking a photograph and making a painting of that photograph.
Mm-hmm.
I'm using a lot of different photographs.
Yeah, I see. I can fully understand.
Like I'm working on a painting right now of the city of Durham. Quite a large painting.
Boy, that sounds like an ambition.
Durham.
How big? How large?
6 feet by 3 feet.
Wow.
Would this be an aerial view?
No. This would be
6 by 3. Is that a panorama type of look then?
You could say it's panoramic, yes.
Panoramic,
it takes in the entire skyline with Route 147 in the foreground.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. The vantage point is standing on a bridge on Fayetteville Street.
Oh, yeah.
Looking
I know,
at the city.
I know that.
You know that view.
I think he's going back to the draftsman in him.
Yeah.
So essentially, you're standing in Haytai with the Haytai Community Center behind you, looking at the city of Durham. And this painting kind of tells the story of Durham because there is the skyline there. But in the foreground is Route 147, which takes up most of the foreground, which is where Haytai used to be.
Yes. And mm-hmm. which was deliberately placed there in order to decimate the African-American community in Durham in when that was built. That was done deliberately to devastate the people of the African-American community.
That I think that was part of what was going on. So by putting that particular viewpoint of Durham, I'm telling the story of Durham.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing what happened to Haytai right there in the foreground.
Yeah.
At the same time, I've got the entire skyline, so you can see all the churches in town, you can see the banks,
interesting,
the various businesses that are in town.
Right.
In the middle ground, there's a lot of car dealerships, because there are car dealerships in downtown Durham.
Yeah. Now, is your scene true to the actual appearance, or did you implement?
Yes.
I didn't know, because some artists would implement for imagery's sake.
When I do tweak things a little bit here mm-hmm. and there, it's for artistic reasons, not so much for... But as far as representational accuracy, mm-hmm. it's representationally accurate.
Wow.
It's showing what's actually
that
there.
You actually see.
So you're seeing the churches, the businesses, the banks, the car dealerships, all that goes on in Durham. And it's not exactly in the center, but kind of front and center is the Durham County Corrections Facility.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Which is another piece of the story of Durham.
Yeah. Okay.
But all the good things of Durham are also there, all the building, the churches and businesses, like I said. So getting all that story of Durham into a single painting was my goal. Now, to accomplish that goal, you know, I went and stood on the bridge and took, I don't know, I didn't count them, but probably 100 pictures. I've gone there four or five times, taken pictures in all sorts of light, all sorts of different times of day and different angles. And I'm working from, out of those 100, 150 pictures that I started with, a dozen or so photos that I'm working from with, you know, some detail, some big picture. So it's not a painting of a photograph, it's a painting of Durham. And I'm just using those photographs to get where I'm going.
And to remind you.
And to actually see the detail so that I can put those into the painting. Now, when people look at my paintings and say, that looks like a photograph, that's because that's their reference point. When they see really realistic, you know, detailed pictures, they immediately think it looks like a photograph because that's...
And I would challenge anyone to think that drawing from that as a premise is in any wise easy. It is just as difficult and just as challenging to create a work from something already mapped out before you if you're going to put it into your own hand as it would be in any other direction, any other medium.
Yes, at the end of the day, I'm drawing with the brush.
Yes.
Yeah.
Really, the only difference is I'm not standing on that bridge with an easel and a 6-foot piece of canvas.
And he's not going to cut his ear off.
No. I'm certainly not in the Van Gogh vein.
That's right.
So, although I do work from photographs, and my paintings do look photorealistic, that's not so much my goal. It's representing the scene itself.
I can see your point there. Yeah, I think that was actually well explained in how you defined your work. So your initial correspondence with Arts Inc. was just to send a submission of works,
entering
four works.
Yes,
I came across them. I want to say it's a better part of a year ago. Just it was an incidental email because at the time I had not joined the Durham Arts Guild. I have since, or various other mediums, but I'm pretty well known throughout the art world for my stuff because I keep popping up in all the most unusual places. So they've got to notice me sooner or later, but. It was interesting, and it just began as a correspondence, and then just gradually a friendship evolved with them overall, just the idea of all of the various arts that they want to represent. And since they've actually built me a link on their website, from theirs to mine, as well as separately on their own agenda. But no, I think it's a very noble enterprise. I really appreciate what Christine and the entire group are trying to establish in representing the all artistic mediums, no medium denied. And I think in that regard, I really take my hats off there.
Yeah, I think there's really a need for a magazine like Arts Inc. In North Carolina.
Yeah.
We don't have one of those specifically focused on the arts.
And at some point, too, I thought I'd mention, I'm going to be interviewing, I haven't figured out a date yet, although it's likely to be sometime in March, I'm going to be interviewing George Petros, and you can Google him, Petros. He's quite a legendary character himself. I won't go any further than that, but that'll be coming on sometime in March. Anyway, back to you. Anything else you'd like to point out about, well, I know you don't want to go into too much detail about the particular work.
Well,
but,
I had a point of interest I'm curious about. When you submitted to them, how did you do that? Was it a photograph, or did you send them an actual piece of work? How did that work?
Well, I submitted images via email.
Okay.
Which was the format that you wanted, you know, send us some JPEGs, us images.
Oh, okay.
So I sent in, and I found that it pays to follow instructions when there's.
I agree. My one trick pony just wouldn't do it
for a juried show or for a contest of this sort. So they wanted, I think, 4 images or 6 images, and I sent them the 4 images or 6 images they asked for, and let it go with that.
Oh, okay. And that's what they used as the source to judge what they were looking at.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm sure they spent weeks looking at all 12,000 or however many. Likely more than that they were judging. God, I can just imagine stuff just strewn out all over the place coming up with ideas and notions.
Yeah, so if you send it by email, that means you sent a JPEG that was not... What was the resolution image?
I sent higher resolution pictures than I would post on the website.
Yeah, oh, okay.
So that they could, you know, zoom in on it, see the detail.
I got it, okay.
And see what the paintings are really like.
Well, it certainly speaks well to have emerged from that volume of
That's pretty amazing.
Art to consider.
Yeah.
Give us a little background on yourself. Where do you hail from originally?
Well, I'm originally from Worcester, Massachusetts.
Worcester, which I really struggled with last time when we were doing our show, recognizing that the 10 artists, the runners-up, Worcestershire or whatever.
I used to live in a mail truck made in Worcester, Massachusetts.
In a mail truck?
That's right.
Where were you trying to send yourself?
When I first got married, my wife and I didn't have any place to live, and we bought this old beat-up mail truck and converted it to a sort of a RV, and that's where we lived.
It's interesting how many of us have been through that phase of life.
My parents let me park it in their yard. That's where we stayed.
That's our camper. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, where I come from, we'd say pack the car in the yard.
Yeah, pack the car in the yard.
Worcester was a manufacturing center for a lot of things.
Where I come from, we say, what the bloody hell is that in the yard?
Diners, for example. Worcester is the home of diners.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
The very neighborhood that I grew up in.
Didn't know that.
There is a factory where the Worcester Lunch Car Company, where they built most of the diners that you see scattered across the northeast
country. It's a pretty blue-collar environment, then.
It's a very blue-collar environment. Okay. And I come from blue-collar roots. Dad's a machinist.
Mm-hmm. My father's a tool and die maker, so yeah.
Tool and die. That's what Dad did. He was he's retired now, but he's got a little machine shop in his basement.
As does mine. And he'll never quite give it up.
He's got a lathe, he's got a Bridgeport, he's got a milling machine. He's a happy guy.
All of that.
So
my father was actually a world renowned, recognized tool and die maker. That's one of the reasons we went to South Africa from Germany. He's a German tool and die maker, and they were looking for those Werkzeugmachers back in the day.
So yeah, like I say, very very blue collar roots. I mean, I came from a neighborhood that was post industrial. Really, by the time I came along, much of the industry had already left, but there were still vestiges of it. For example, you were living
in the skeleton of it.
Yes. I went to Worcester Boys Trade, a trade school.
Explain that, a trade school, okay.
So we had, and that's where I learned my work ethic. That's where I learned to work. We had a week of shop and a week of school. So crammed the four-year high school education into 2 years because the other 2 years, alternating weeks,
it's
was
almost
learning.
Like an apprenticeship.
It was an apprenticeship. I had to fill out a time card every week.
Mm-hmm.
We took coffee breaks at 10 and our lunch breaks, and we'd fill out our time cards and we'd do work. So I learned how to draw gears and pulleys and cams and machine parts. And really the drafting training that I got was geared toward industry. It was the vestiges of the whole industrial past of Worcester was boys' trade. Now, both of my brothers went into the machine trade. They went to the machine shop and learned the same trade as Dad. My brother is still in that trade.
How about the other? Has one slipped out of it, or they both remain in it?
Well, my younger brother was a submariner for about 20 years.
Interesting. Wow.
But he had trained as a draftsman, as a machinist, and work in that field before he went into the service.
Had good common sense for understanding the machinery, no doubt.
Yes. But that instilled the work ethic that I have to this day, where I'm not filling out time cards for myself because
But you get up and you drive yourself to where you need to be.
Well, at this point, I don't even need to do that. I just get up and walk across my living room.
I didn't literally mean drive. I meant the personal drive, the inner drive.
I thought you meant drive, literally.
Yes, no, well.
Yes.
For my sake, I do.
Yes.
Because everything is far away from me. I'm back in the woods.
Well, I moved to Durham specifically to build a studio there, which I did. I bought a little roundhouse down on South Duke Street and added a square studio onto the back of it, and that's my workspace now. Yeah, I chose Durham.
So what's the morning routine? A cup of coffee and going into the studio and
contemplating? A cup of coffee, going to the studio and get to work.
Fantastic. How many pieces have you, if you've ever numbered them, how many pieces have you actually created over the years?
Not that it really matters or
is significant, just curious.
Can't say I've counted them. Lately, my production has been slower because I'm doing more and more realistic work with more and more detail in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm making larger and larger paintings, so they tend to take more time.
Yes.
Last year, I probably did a couple dozen pieces total, maybe three dozen. some smaller ones, some larger ones.
And are they frequently on exhibit? Do you have an exhibit at home? I mean, where does your work circulate?
Right now, you can see my work in various juried shows. I always enter the things that are going on at the Durham Arts Guild, okay. which is terrific. Visual Arts Exchange in Raleigh, I'll usually be in their shows as well. Twice a year, there's an art walk in Durham.
Yes.
And now that I have my studio in downtown Durham, I open it up for the art walk.
Oh, perfect.
So it was, the 2 days in November. And again, that will be coming up in April. Mm-hmm. So I'll be doing the art walk in April. I'm not with a gallery right now. I had been with a gallery here in Chapel Hill for about a year and a half, 2 years. But I parted ways with that gallery earlier this year.
Which reminds me, if I may interject for a moment, I want to mention that I'm actually with Artful Greetings Gallery. Good Lord. Almost slipped up. I've been meaning to mention Valerie and Carl, whom we'll have on the show again sometime in the not-too-distant future, but they still maintain quite a variety of my works. Hmm. Back to you.
Well, sometime this year I expect I will sign on with another gallery. I'm taking my time about that. I want to choose a gallery that's best suited. Mm-hmm. It's a business partnership, really, between an artist and a gallery, and it works both ways. So I need to find the gallery that's best suited to my work, where my work fits in best with the gallery. Mm-hmm. So I'm talking to the various galleries in the Triangle and elsewhere to find the right gallery for myself. But I'm taking my time about that. I'm not in any hurry. But sometime this year, I'll sign up with another gallery or two.
Yeah.
And when I do, that will be on my website, obviously.
I've got to create a few more works because right now I think Valerie and Carl have most of mine, and I haven't really been as that ambitious in cranking out any new
ones. Yes, and they don't want to give them back to you.
I know. Nobody ever does.
Well, okay, so you were at this basically trade school,
mm-hmm.
and so pick it up from there.
Well, once I got out of Boys Trade, I did do some drafting jobs. Around the Worcester area.
Mm-hmm.
But that trade dried up pretty quickly because about that time, now I learned drafting the old-fashioned way with a T-square and triangles.
I remember seeing my father go through
pieces of paper.
I took a drafting course, and that's what we did when I was a kid. That's how it was taught.
But just about the time I graduated and was full-fledged draftsman, the drafting trade just dried right up. Computers took it over.
Yeah,
pretty much.
What was left of it, and much of the manufacturing got shipped overseas anyhow, so there weren't a whole lot of drafting jobs. So I was kind of on my own, and having come from blue-collar roots, which means we didn't have any money to speak of,
yes.
I was kind of on my own and had to make a living. A friend of mine, Tom Daly, and I were kind of hanging around Worcester, and it occurred to us that Worcester really needed a new nightclub. It only had one.
Okay.
Ralph's, which was a great place, and it was fine, but we needed a punk rock nightclub. This is the early 80s called punk rock came along.
Remember those days, yeah.
So we took out an ad in the Boston Globe, said investor wanted for a nightclub. We got lots of calls, and somebody backed us, and we opened up our own punk rock nightclub. And we did that for a couple of years. Black Flag played there, Fear, Flipper, all sorts of interesting punk bands that were doing the Econoline tour of the United mm-hmm. States at the time. So I did that for a couple of years, and that was a blast, but there was absolutely no money in it. I was just broke all
Even
the time.
Even the bands weren't making that much.
After a couple of years, I said, all right, I can't do this anymore. I need to do a real job. So I found myself a job at the late, great Digital Equipment Corporation.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Wow. And I worked mm-hmm. there for 13 years. I started out making copies, and I was a technical writer for a long time. Kind of worked my way up through that whole process. So 13 years in the cubicles, and I worked with some brilliant people. This is early in, this is in the 80s, before there was such a thing as the World Wide Web, before PCs.
Right.
Really, about the time I started, PCs came along and ultimately destroyed the Digital Equipment Corporation. It's long since gone.
That's right.
They made mini computers, and got outmoded.
My brother worked for IBM during that time, mm-hmm. and was one of the project managers for the PCs.
It was an interesting time, and I learned a great deal. I mean, I didn't go to college because there was no money for college. I was actually discouraged from going to college. I remember going to my guidance counselor with catalogs from CalArts, RISD, all the art schools. I
said, certainly names you'd recognize.
This is what I really want to do, is be an artist.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought them to my guidance counselor, and he looked at him and said, oh, that's great. And he handed them back to me and said, I'll get you a job. And he got me a drafting job.
Oh, Lord,
really,
that's what they saw.
Steered me directly away. And that was the heritage. I mean, that was the way that Boys Trade worked, was put these kids into the workforce.
Yes.
That's what this is here for. And that's what they did, was put me into the workforce.
And art was rarely encouraged in those environments.
It was actively discouraged.
I received no encouragement at home, mm-hmm. I can say that.
Yeah, it was quite clear. You know, you're not going to be able to make a living doing that. Go find something. You know,
yes.
That's why
yes.
you're trained as a draftsman.
That's meant to be a hobby.
Exactly. That's just a hobby. So college was not in the cards. And I looked into it anyway, thinking, mm-hmm, well, sure. You know, there must be a way. And I looked into
there
it, and the more I
there.
Looked into it, in the early 80s, about the time I would have been, you know, college age and college bound, what was going on in the art schools, I don't think would have done me much good.
Yeah,
there was a lot of conceptual art going on, and they were just kind of off in left field.
It was probably just beginning to emerge, coming into its own anyway, not really having a full feel for where to go artistically. Because I think it sort of it came out of a very strange environment and tried to find its way.
Yeah. Well, all the people I do know who did go to art school in the early 80s aren't making art today.
Yeah,
they're doing something
interesting,
else.
Interesting, yeah. Now, you've got to have the fortitude to stick with it somehow through the lean and the more generous times.
Well, it occurred to me that I really didn't need art school. All I really needed was some paint and a canvas and a place to do it.
And practice.
And practice.
Essentially teaching
so
yourself. So
for all the years I worked at Digital, you know, I'd come home at night and I would paint. And I'd spend my weekends painting. And whenever I wasn't in the cubicle, I was painting. So I did that for 13 odd years. And then I moved to Connecticut and worked for Cigna Healthcare for about 5 years.
Worked for Satan, I thought I heard that for a minute.
Cigna, I'm sorry. Cigna.
Slip of the tongue, we'll catch you on those at the speakeasy. Let me interrupt for 1 second, Bruce.
Sure.
I just want to remind everybody out there that this is WCOM 103.5 FM, Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else, and we are being entertained by the artist Bruce Mitchell, the new cover artist for Arts Inc. magazine, about to premiere in March. I'm in the studio here with John Paul, my co-host, going on about things artistic, and also want to mention and acknowledge our sponsors, our underwriters, Cabin Studio in the Woods, Inc., with John Demers and so on, whom I hope is faring better at this point. Hello, John. Do drop me a line, get in touch. And also want to mention that Carolina Theatre's got quite a few things going on. They've got that film, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, or whatever that fellow is, starts out old and grows young, and a few other films there. They've also got Brian Adams coming up. Just look it up on the web. That's this week at the Carolina Theatre of Durham, the historic Carolina Theatre of Durham. Shout out to you folks. Also shout out to Ray Paschal, with whom I hope to be going to Las Vegas for some food-oriented function and just to go blow it all out.
Crazy.
I wanted to give an acknowledgement to all this before going back, because I know between now and the end of the hour, I'm going to completely forget it. So now it's not forgotten, it's done, and here we go. Back to Bruce.
There we go.
All right. Where was I?
So you were back, we're going back into the blue-collar realm, and...
Well, I was in Connecticut for about 5 years.
There we go.
Again, you know, working in cubicles, mm-hmm. doing corporate stuff all day, but I'd go home at night and I'd paint, and I'd spend my weekend.
It's a task in itself to survive that depressing element, because I've done it for short periods of my life, and it's really, those cubicles are not by any means charming.
At the same time, it provided me with a decent living.
Sure, I understand that.
And benefits, and I couldn't complain about that. But all along, my goal was to be an independent artist.
Mm-hmm.
And after 5 years at Cigna, I had had enough of that and decided I'm not going to wait until I'm retirement age to be a painter. I'm going to go do it now. That mm-hmm. was in 2000. So I did. I moved to Northampton, Mass., and was painting full-time there. And I was doing that for about a year and just getting going when an old friend of mine, Tom, the guy I had started the punk rock nightclub with in the early 80s.
To connecting again.
He had gone on to a career in advertising where he had an office on literally on Madison Avenue.
Wow.
Doing advertising. He was a VP at a big ad agency and had a parallel career in advertising while I'd been off, you know, doing my own corporate thing. But at this point in 2003, Tom calls me up and what he wanted to do was start his own marketing research firm. And he was living in Charleston at the time. I said, well, all right, I'll help you start that company. But the deal is, once the company is up and running and can run without me, I'm going to go back to painting full time, because that's really what I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that. We started. We came to Chapel Hill, actually here in Carrboro, about two blocks away from where we're sitting right now. We opened a small office. A very small office, four little rooms, and just the two of us, Tom and I, started a marketing research firm called W5. And you can Google that if you're curious about W5, which is...
The letter 5, I'm assuming.
Who, what, when, where, why. Which are the questions that you seek to answer when you're doing marketing research.
Or journalism.
Yes.
Yes. Common sense sometimes.
Yes. So we started a marketing research firm here and moved from Carrboro to elsewhere in Chapel Hill, a larger office, and then ultimately to Durham, where it's located now. And when I left, there were a dozen employees. The company was up and running and doing very well, and it still is. Doing that essentially took all my time, because running a business is kind of all-consuming. So I did that for the 4 years that it took to get the business to the point where it could live without me.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as it did, I went back to painting. And at that point... I could have gone anywhere. I could have gone back to Northampton, which is a great place for an artist to be. I looked at Paducah, Kentucky, which has a program for relocating artists into a neighborhood where they've got a lot of houses, where they want to fill them with artists, mm-hmm. and have been doing that. That's a very successful program. And I looked at a lot of different places I could have gone to be an artist, and I chose Durham specifically because that, I think, is where the action is right now for artists, and for that matter, for musicians. The music scene in
there's a lot
Durham
happening in Durham
amazing.
At this point. Yeah, I think Durham is sort of. I really think it's emerging in a very strong way, and we haven't seen the full emergence yet. No, nowhere near it.
I agree.
Now, might I ask, was Tom encouraging in your direction?
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, you were friends, and you did some. You had a history together. Just wondering how, when he went to the practicality as far as business goes, of getting into advertising, was he still the encouraging friend as far as your own artistic endeavor goes?
Oh, certainly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just wondering.
Always.
Sometimes people have a change of heart, change of mind, change of perspective. Sometimes even their own personalities change when realism hits them too hard.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tom and I have been friends since we were teenagers, and even when we were off doing our own thing. He lived in New York City, and I lived over in Massachusetts and Connecticut. We stayed in touch and have always been good friends.
Yeah. Sounds like the kind of lifetime friend you don't find too often. I've had a few of those in my life. Sadly, mm-hmm. they've passed on, but yeah.
Very valuable.
I understand. Very much so.
So now I'm in Durham, and I'm painting full-time, and I have my own studio, and it's, I'm living the dream.
Mm-hmm.
This is really what I wanted to do. That's what I've been, saving up for 20 years to be able to do, and now I'm doing it.
Wonderful. Well, this is a splendid way of emerging. And, of course, I think you've emerged in other ways before, but something tells me that ArtSync is gonna make an impression. I'm really very supportive of what it is they stand for, and I can't wait to see it all happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to be tremendous.
Yeah.
Indeed. So that means, I guess, that, Bruce, you, your income comes from selling your work.
Yes.
Basically. Do you get commissions, or does like an ad agency come to you and say, we need something for an ad, or do you do any of that kind of stuff?
Interesting that you would bring that up, because when I do shows like Centerfest in mm-hmm, Durham,
of course,
or the Art Walk, a lot of the paintings I've done in the past few years do have logos in them. I'm doing paintings. If you look at my website, you'll see I've got a whole section of paintings of signs.
Yes.
The Ford sign.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes. Right.
Ford.
Yes.
And people wonder, were you commissioned for that by Ford Motor Company? Well, no, I wasn't. Or if I'm painting a sign for, a Krispy Kreme or a Waffle House or a place like...
Sure.
No, there is no relationship between me and those companies. I'm just painting the world that I live in.
Yeah.
I go around and look for things to paint. And to me, what's interesting about those signs is that they're a presence. They're sculptural.
Mm-hmm.
if they and at the same time they're utilitarian. They tell us where you can buy gasoline or buy donuts or
sure. Or living in the real world, as you put it.
And there are a lot of illusions in there. The companies that these represent, you know, provide a living for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. You know, if you've got a Ford dealership, there's a lot of people working there and making their living at that. So there are positive aspects to it. And at the same time, there, you know, corporations have their foibles and their drawbacks. And,
no doubt.
But I'm not necessarily commenting directly on those things. I'm just looking for something that I can use artistically. I'm looking for something that will give me a basis for a composition.
Something that might inspire a certain challenge in you.
Exactly. It's all about light and shadow.
Sure.
Like I say, it's...
And
it's,
what each individual piece sort of brings out in you, what you want to explore in yourself, really, in many ways.
Right. And it leaves for the viewer, you know, it's open to interpretation. You may interpret that as a comment one way or another, but it is open to interpretation. Now, as far as commissions, I do work on commissions now and then. I'd recently completed a commission for a friend who has a house in Durham. Painted her house.
Her house. Did a portrait of that. Not a mural in the house.
No, a painting of her house.
I understand.
I do commissions now and then, but I tend to do what I want to do, mm-hmm. and I'm not that concerned about, you know, its saleability. I'm not painting for an audience. I am the audience, really. I'm painting things that I think are neat.
I honestly feel that's what creates the true master, because that way you indulge in so many various aspects of your own creativity that you can bring that ultimate absolute best forth. Mm-hmm. And one work may stand out more so than others do, but it's because you've dabbled in all of them that somehow comes together and gains and builds its strength.
Mm-hmm. But I do have themes that I tend to return to, like the sign paintings. That started back in, I don't know, 1983, or I think about 83. One day I was stopped at a light, and I looked up at this Burger King sign, and I saw the big puffy clouds behind it, and this Burger King sign, and I just heard the music. You know?
Of all the things to paint. Yes.
Yes.
But
I painted that sign, and then I didn't do another one for a couple of years, but then I came, you know, I saw some other signs while I was walking around, and... You know, they just sort of spoke to me and said, you know, this is something I need to paint.
I have to say the one thing that I that spoke clearly to me in viewing all of your art is that the draftsman in you is definitely very much alive.
Mm-hmm.
Back to you. You were on a good roll there. You're just talking about signage.
But that's not all I do. You know, I am painting landscapes.
Sure.
And, you know, signs show up in them. The utility poles frequently show up in them. Once in a while, I'll run across something where they'll all come together. I did a painting called King's Auto Parts. There's a out on Route 70 in Haw River, heading out toward Burlington. There's a car, a 1970 Toronado, up on a pole, serving as a sign King Auto Parts.
Yeah, I know that place.
So I was able to make a painting that's a landscape. And it has a car, which is one of my other themes. You'll see there's a section of my site where I've got some cars in the sky. And that dates mm-hmm. back to the early 80s as well. I had done this painting where I just put a car in the sky because I had a sky and I had a car. I put the two together.
Who's driving?
It's kind of a lark, putting a car in the sky, but I kept returning to that theme. So here was this car.
I don't know, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang did it.
Nope.
Sorry.
I will cop to having seen Chitty Chitty Bang Bang in the back of the station wagon as a wee lad at the drive-in. That was influential, I suppose.
We never know where these recesses emerge from.
Yeah. So with King Auto Parts, I found a scene in which it's a landscape, and it's got a car in the sky, and it's a sign, and there's a utility pole behind it. So I've got all of those into one painting, and that was sweet seeing that scene. I knew immediately, okay, I have to paint this.
Interesting.
So all three of those series came together in that one painting, but I'm pursuing each of the series.
And in a very real sense, that shows realism as well as the abstract in a very realism-oriented way, because that's what you're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see the inspiration on both levels there, although your abstract work goes in a completely different direction. I've seen that too.
Although on its surface it seems completely different, compositionally I think there's commonality between that, what I'm doing with the abstraction and what I'm doing with the realism.
I see that.
It's not immediately apparent, but it's definitely there.
Which is a good thing, because it's almost like a different signature in a sense, and then you realize, and you know, you come to appreciate the artist by really think having the work for a while and appreciating.
Yeah. Well, having been at it for as many years as I have, I think I've developed a style that's recognizably mine. I think when you see one of my paintings, you know it's one of mine. You know it's a Mitchell.
Yeah.
What about portraiture?
I don't do portraiture.
No, not at all.
No. I haven't seen any on your site.
Do you put people in your paintings, though?
Now and then, yes.
Yeah.
Not that much. I'm more of a landscape painter. I'm more interested in the landscape and the world around me. Portraiture I leave to portraitists.
Yeah.
There are people who are
never
much
really
better
interested
at
you.
I'm
sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt there, but did that ever actually interest you as a challenge of painting the human form, or did you go through any of that?
Not really. And I think part of that is that others have done it and still do it better than I can. Mm-hmm. And for me, it wouldn't be new and different. It would be something that's been done a million times.
Yeah,
and I don't want to do things that have been done a million. I want to do something different.
Yeah.
Which is really where a lot of my landscape painting comes from. It's landscape, but it's not, you know, the rolling hills of the Hudson River Valley. That's not where I live. If I lived in the Hudson River Valley, maybe I'd be painting that. But I live in Durham, and that's, right now, what I'm interested in painting.
Mm-hmm.
There are lots of things. I mean, I can spend my life painting what's right here in my backyard.
Indeed.
So is the city of Durham the only project you're working on right now, or do you have two or three pieces you work on at the same time that you just sort of go back and forth to?
I do have a couple of other pieces, smaller pieces that I've been working on at the same time, but right now I'm mainly concentrating on that painting of Durham because I want to get that done.
How well into it are you?
I'd say I'm about 60% of the way there.
Oh, pretty good. So you're definitely seeing it come together.
I mean, I'm painting in layers. You know, traditional, you know, start with a drawing and then underpainting in umber, very traditional methods, and then building up the layers to get the level of detail that I want to have with the finished product.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty time consuming. I've been on it for a couple of months, and it's probably going to take me another month or so to finish it.
I can well imagine. Well, bouncing over to John
pretty
Paul,
neat.
Bringing up again that he is going to start his own show today, right after ours, as a matter of fact. Quick question to you then. Do you want us to take 5 minutes between shows, or do
you know,
want to
that's
roll
right that's what I do want to do. I want to break between shows. I'll put some music on, or if the automated system is working, I'll bring that back up. And
so as a matter of fact, we can bring the show to a close pretty quickly for you to have the time to do that thing. So
well,
it matters not to me.
Whatever works out is fine.
We've given Bruce ample time to express himself, and I'm certainly we're available for more, but I also want to take into consideration the fact that we've got a new show generating today, and that usually takes a little time.
That's right, and then Paul Nagy will be
beat
on.
Beat you with a drumstick.
Beat me if I mispronounce his name.
That's right, Nagy.
And Paul will be on at noon.
And what is
today.
His show? Because he's starting a new show as well.
Is it a different title?
So today is a bit of a turnaround. Is it?
So it's no longer Touchstone.
Is it? I don't know if it is or not. I'm surprised that he gave up the time slot right after mine.
He didn't like getting up that early. So now he gets to stay, relaxed for another hour before he comes over here.
It's a motivational premise, I see.
Yes. So,
do you stay up, Paul?
I guess we'll just have to see what his show's about today at noon.
So I'm assuming it's still Touchstones because I haven't been informed otherwise.
I don't know, but I haven't been told it's a different name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, that happens after John Paul. Which means that we don't get to record our stuff until sometime much later this afternoon, or actually run copy.
Well, I think we're going to take a long enough break so that I can save this show.
Okay.
And start another recording.
Well, I would say, why don't we go ahead and bring this to a wrap then, in order to accomplish all that? Want to give a shout out to everybody at ArtSync Magazine. Good luck with everything that you've got ahead of you, Bruce. If there are any closing comments you'd like to make, give us your website again and the public contact information, and we'll bring this to a wrap.
All right. Well, my website is paintingsbybruce.com, or you can just Google me by name. Just look up Bruce Mitchell, and I'll come right up.
That's M-I-T-C-H-E-L-L.
That is
Bruce
correct.
Mitchell.
Thanks. And I do want to give a shout out to Christine and all the folks at ArtSync.
And Lisa.
Indeed, all the guys and gals.
Who else is it there that's working the
Linda
tails off?
As a matter of fact, I heard Linda was not feeling too well lately. I'm hoping.
Well,
she's
I can
better.
Relate to that. I've had this cold for about a week and a half now, and
something attacked me over the weekend, but I vitamin C'd it to death, so it's gone.
I tried that, but I still got sick.
Oh well.
But then, now that when is ArtSync magazine coming out with Bruce's work on the
cover?
Well,
I think the magazine will emerge in March.
March 2nd.
March 2nd
is the release.
Okay,
date.
So that's not that really that far off now.
Date. That's coming up
really,
quickly.
No.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then the launch date of the ArtSync overall will be celebrated a little earlier. In February sometime, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'll be having George Petras on, who is Christine Clemens' father. So,
right.
Looking forward to that moment. And we'd like to thank everybody out there for tuning us in. Happy New Year. Of course, we're well into the new year, but let's keep an eye on our politicians and not let them go the way of corruption, because even Barack Obama has given much more power than any president has had in a very long time, some of which I'd like to see him surrender and put back into the hands of the people. I think it's really something we need to keep our eye on, and sounds like John Paul is going to keep a hawk's eye on all of those goings on with his show.
I may get a little into the details of what's been going on with that. Yeah.
Good, and that's coming up very shortly. And that is, give us the title again to your show coming up.
Well, for right now, I'm calling it John Paul's Truth Quest and Variety Hour. The reason for the Variety Hour part is I plan to have some people who play music on the show, and I may end up doing some jamming with various musicians.
With them, yeah.
As you know, I'm a musician. I have my degree in composition and theory, minor in piano. I play several other instruments. And
John Paul and I have worked together for years
and years
on stage.
The stuff that we play here frequently, you'll hear my music accompanying Claudio's poetry, like on the opening and closing piece, which we do not have today, the closing piece.
We don't have the closing piece.
Because somebody forgot to bring the CD with them.
Twas I, Claudius.
And, but you know, you can go on the archive on communityradio.coop and find Claudio Speakeasy and go to the end of a show and play it for yourself if you want to, if you miss it.
That's right. And if you have any difficulty...
Adrift is the name of... You could recite Adrift without... Never mind.
I don't think I
never
have it
mind.
In my brain. No, that's actually...
never mind.
Actually, you might be able to find that in ArtSync magazine before too long. What else was I getting ready to say? Having a bit of a brain freeze here. I think at this point we're pretty much wrapped up.
Yeah, we're pretty wrapped.
I want to thank all of the sponsors and everyone tuning in, both on the web. Oh, I wanted to say, if anybody does have any difficulty getting to the normal WCOM link, just go to my website, which is www.claudioarts.com, and there's actually a button you can press, and it'll tell you everything and take you right to the archives.
Indeed.
So.
Well, so in a few minutes, we'll be back on the air with the John Paul Truth Quest and Variety Hour.
And I'll be playing guest/co-host on this one, so I'm humbling myself between now and then. This is Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else, about to sign off. Bruce, thank you very much and congratulations.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you, ArtSync. This is the Speakeasy signing off. Until next time, cheers.